So good morning. This is the moment that many of us have been waiting for, Peruchim Habayim, and it's a big simcha to see every one of us who made it this morning, and even with those wearing masks, I could see the smile under your mask. But Baruch Hashem. To be here live is a big schus. Hod l'Hashem ki tov, ki l'olam chazdo. And I'm sure each of us have our own stories, you know, what went on over the past few months. And we're very grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be here. This morning's shiur is sponsored l'schus refu shalema, Yehudis Leah bas simel michla, and Sviarye ben Bela Yita, Deshav Rafu Shlema. Thank you very much from the Florenger family. And also Zecher Nishmas Rachmiel Yosef ben Gershon from the Berger family. When you think about, I guess, having the first live share, let's think about a topic, what to do. And I thought of doing another personality in, I guess you call it the Halachic Personality Series. Instead of just analyzing a topic on Halacha and utilizing our great poskim through the ages, we developed this series of analyzing poskim and trying to put together a sketch of their psukim and perhaps any themes or something special about them that stands out. And we've done Kanan Hara quite a few poskim just this year alone. Gave a share on David Feinstein. I believe it's over 200 people have watched the share, and the scope of the share really goes beyond the confines of this room. We gave a share earlier this year also on Rav Zalman and Nechemya Goldberg. I think that one had a cute title, whose reach spanned from, I forgot the exact language, but something like from T-Net to Beit Vegan, everywhere in between. For that share, I had the schus, a family member of Reb Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, who actually also learned the Chavrusa with him. I had never had the schus of meeting with Zalman Nechemya, but he said that the whole family was passing around that shir, and they felt it really defined him quite well. It's a big schus to be part of such a thing. So this morning, today's shir is entitled Rav Aaron Cutler, Lakewood's first and foremost posuk. In fact, just yesterday in Shul, Chashav al Talmud Chacham said to me, you know, I saw the title of your shir. I never realized Rav Aaron Cutler was a posuk. I think that itself is already satisfying that my shir impacted someone before they even heard it. Just the title alone. And I think with Rav Aaron Cutler, he was such a great figure. He's obviously famous for starting the Lakewood Yeshiva, which in many ways he played a major role in the growth of Torah in America today. He was known for his work during World War II, saving as many lives as possible from here in America, leading, one of the leaders of the Vahd Hatzalah. He was already known in Europe. He was a Rosh Yeshiva, Yeshiva of Kletsk. So those are all major titles, accomplishments that Rav Aaron Cutler is most known for. But at the same time, Rav Aaron Cutler was also posek. And today's shir We're going to try to bring that out. Now, it is a very tricky topic. I remember last year we gave a share of Yaakov Kamenetsky. That one we called a memorable gadol, but a forgotten posik. A similar thing that people know of Rabbi Yaakov as one of the gadoli ador. He was a Rosh Hashiva, but people forgot he was also posik. But there, Rabbi Yaakov has a sefer in all of Shulchan Aruch, and you know there's what to find. Rav Aaron, I found was a lot more challenging. Now I did utilize Rav Aaron. In his lifetime, didn't publish, but his family published two volumes entitled Mishnas Rav Aaron, Shalos HaTshuvos, which between them, I believe, have 76 tshuvos. Most of them pretty long and complex. No quick psakim, at least inside the Mishnas Rav Aaron. But I went through many svarim, which I found things quoted. B'shem Rav Aaron. There's one sefer kuntres in particular, which is a phenomenal sefer. It's a little kuntres called Nahag B'chachma, going through the minhagim of the Lakewood Yeshiva regarding davening and Yom Tovim, days of the week, and it extensively quotes Rav Aaron. And we'll use that later. I spoke to a lot of people. I reached out to Chashav HaTalmid Chacham in Eretz Yisrael. He called me back in late Thursday night, early Friday morning, Eretz Yisrael time, to answer some of my questions I had. He learned by Rav Aaron. And together, I think, we should have a nice portrait and a nice halakhic analysis of who Rav Aaron Cutler was. But before we begin the actual halachic shaila, is just a brief biography. Rav Aaron Cutler, nice little trivia, was not born Aaron Cutler. His family name was actually Pines. He was born in 1891 in an area which currently is Russia, but through the decades went through a few different fights. Lithuania, Belarus, whatever. His family actually changed the name, which was quite common in the Jewish world, changed the name to Cutler to avoid the Russian army draft. So his father might have been named Pines, but he was named Cutler. Unfortunately, his father passed away when he was only 10 years old. And this itself led for a challenging young period of his life. He was raised by an uncle, but obviously as an orphan, there were many different influences which were all trying to prey on this young Eloi, this young genius, Talmid Chacham, and there are some famous stories of how within the Haskalah, within the secular movement, there was a lot of effort invested in trying to lure young Aaron Cutler out of the Beis Medrash, out of the yeshiva, and he withstood that. The most famous yeshiva he learned in, which had a big impact on him, was the Slabodka Yeshiva. He learned there for many years, interacted with some of the famous Gedolim, Reuven Grzovsky, I believe is credited as bringing him to yeshiva. He learned together with Mishpacha, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, founder of Chafetz Chaim, Rabbi David Leibowitz, and many, many great Gedolim all interacted with him in his time in Slabodka. He got married to the daughter of Rabbi Isser Zalman Meltzer, who for the time was actually a Rebbe in Slabodka. And he himself became the Rosh Yeshiva in his father-in-law's yeshiva, which was called Kletsk. Originally, it was in a different place called Slutsk. But from sluts to klutz, I guess that's an improvement. But probably for us on these shores, the turning point in Rav Aaron Cutler's life was at the age of 50, in 1941, he came to these shores the month of April, and basically from the moment he got off the boat, in fact, there was a famous story I read, Irving Bunim has a beautiful book. He was a big Askin, a big lay leader in the early Jewish community in America, and he became a Talmud of Rav Aaron Cutler, super close Talmud. And Irving Bunim describes the scene how they went around on Shabbos to fundraise money to bring Rav Aaron Cutler to America. And there was actually a psak from many gedolim that you have to go around, even on Shabbos. It was hatzalos nefashos, literally bringing Rav Aaron. You brought the general of the war, the leader of the Vada, one of the leaders of the Vada Tzala. And from the moment he got off the boat, despite the fact he had offers already then to open the yeshiva, his focus was saving Jews in Europe. And that's what he did for years. After the end of the war, he opened his famous yeshiva of Lakewood. And as they say, the rest of that is history. By the time he was nifter, Lakewood only had about 200 talmidim. It was nifter in 1961. Basically only 20 years later. But those 20 years that he had on these shores, we'll see soon, had such an amazing impact on literally all of us today. Now, in terms of talking about Rav Aaron Cutler and Halacha, I think the first area that I am going to focus on is his prominence as a posek. As I mentioned in the story, people scratched their heads. Rav Aaron Cutler was a posek? He sure was. Actually, what led me to this, just a couple weeks ago, I saw a story how Rav Aaron Cutler would had a seder with one of his talmidim in yeshiva for an hour a week, learning Shulchan Aruch, learning Mishnah Berurah, learning Halacha. This Talmud is the famous head of the Star K, Rav Moshe Heinemann. He had a seder with Rav Aaron Cutler, learning an hour a week, going through Shulchan Aruch, Mishnah Berurah, Psak Halacha. Rav Aaron was also famously seen in many events holding a Mishnah Berurah. Wherever he went, there was a Mishnah Berurah on his side. There's a famous picture, that's the one used that we sent out. It was at the Chinuch Atzmoy dinner. I believe that was the year that they honored Rav Yosef Ber Soloveitchik, Rosh Hashiva of Rabbi Yitzchak Elkanan, YU. He's sitting there next to Irving Bunim, holding a Mishnah Berurah, because that's what he carried with him all the time. So there are some stories. I found Rav Shurkin from Eretz Yisrael has a story that Rav Huttner asked Rav Aaron, how come you're always carrying a Mishnah Berurah? You know, you can't think and learning in your head? Come on, you need a sefer? So supposedly Rav Aaron's line back was, hey, we're going to all these meetings, we're figuring out major things for Klal Yisrael. I want the schus of the Chafetz Chaim by my side. That's why I carry the Mishnah Berurah. Okay, he printed that story. I think that story, that's not the real reason. Rav Huttner had a cute line, so Rav Aaron Cutler came back with a cute line. They were friends from Slobodka too. But you know Rav Aaron Cutler carried around the Mishnah Berurah? Because he tried to chop time to learn. That's when he had time for a Mishnah Berurah Seder. I think also they say sometimes when he ate by himself, he would learn Mishnah Berurah. Now, I went through these tshuvas. Who are these tshuvas to? That's also a nice way to, you sometimes look at a sefer, a shalos tshuva sefer. So, you know, sometimes, though, the honest truth, people can write tshuvas to themselves. Oh, this question. Oh, this is the answer. Who wrote the question? Doesn't say the name. The author, you know, wrote the question and provided the answer. But when you see who's asking you questions, You go through the list. Rav Chaskel Abramsky, great Dayan in London and later in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Lazer Silver, one of the biggest Rabbanim in early America, from Cincinnati. Rav Elchanan Wasserman, Rosh Yeshiva and Baranovich. Rav Henkin, the Posek here in early America. Rav Bick, a Hasidish Posek. Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, his father-in-law. Rav Elyashev. And there's even more than that. If you look on the top of your sheets, this is the Hakdama to the first volume of Mishnah Sirbaron. Now, as I said before, the Sefer wasn't compiled by Rav Aaron himself. He didn't publish this in his lifetime. He had no time. He was running around, saving the world, building a yeshiva, running Chinuch Atzmo, and so many organizations, so many things. But his son, Rav Schneer, who unfortunately passed away at a relatively young age, from his hospital bed, one of his last wishes was to try to make sure that these notes that his father left be published. And he dictated, he wasn't involved in the publishing himself, it was already post him being Nifter, but he dictated what to bring in the Hakdama of the Sefer. And he quoted a passage from the Netziv, where the Netziv explains the concept, the terminology that's used, that Torah is Eish Dos. And the Netziv says there's really two parts. There's Eish, there's the learning of Torah, the pilpul of Torah, the interaction, Talmidim and Rebbeim. That's the Eish of Torah. But there's also the Dos. There's also the clarification, the psak halacha that emerges when one learns. It's two parts. Eish, all the fire, and dos, you know, the psak halacha. Now, they write, that was the description, Rav Schneer says, of my father. People know him for his shiurim, for his fiery interaction in the yeshiva. But he also had the ability to clarify, to cut to the root of a topic and paskin it, as we'll soon see. That's the description. And in that second paragraph there in the Hakdama, they bring, I went through all these tshuvas. Some of them don't have names. Do you know who some of those tshuvas were from? None other than Reb Chaim Ozer Grudinsky, the leader of Judaism in Europe, head and shoulders, the Achiezer. He was the giant in the generation of the Chafetz Chaim. He was the one, the Gadol Hador, running Klal Yisrael. He sent tshuvas and shailas to this young Rosh Yeshiva in Kletz, Rav Aaron Cutler, because he saw in him that he was someone who was already great and destined for even greater things. Right? He came to America at the age of 50. But he was paskening these shailas in his 40s and perhaps even in his 30s. That's when some of these psakim were coming. Questions sent to him by Reb Chaim Ozer Grudinsky. So Reb Chaim Ozer's haskama as a posek, I think, makes you a posek. I would also point out, as a nice sidebar in history, I went through all these tshuvas. You'd be surprised at some of the names of the people he corresponded with. Or I would say some people would be surprised. One of the people, there's a tshuva to Rav Herzog. At that point, he was a rav in Ireland, the chief rabbi of Ireland. But he eventually became the first chief rabbi of the state of Israel. That has one of the tshuvas that Rav Aaron Cutler was corresponding with. There's another name, Rav Unterman. I remember that name. If you ever learned Kahati Mishnayis, he's quoted quite a bit. Rav Unterman was also a chief rabbi in Israel. At the time Rav Moshe was responding with him, he was the chief rav of Liverpool. And I found another name, which I actually passed on to the family. This is a Rosh Hashiva in YU, Yitzchak Elchanan, Rav Moshe Aaron Paleyov. Leave his son-in-law was the recently deceased head of the Chaf Kei, Rabbi Center. So he also corresponded with Aaron in a tshuva over there. And you really go through it. Heard in the by the 1950s, already that was a time, I guess, Rav Henkin was getting older. He was the first posek there in America and controlled much then. But Rav Henkin, after Rav Henkin started to get older, the torch was passed. All major shilas, anything doing in America had to go through the psak, the discussion with Rav Aaron Cutler. And thus, for sure in the last decade of his life, Rav Aaron saw many, many shilos. Now, even then, there's a story I found in Rav Moshe's biography that Yoshev asked a shila to Rav Aaron, and Rav Aaron felt, he said, I can't pasken that shayla. We should ask that shayla to Rav Moshe. And Rav Aaron was actually there in Eretz Yisrael by Rav Yoshev's side. And he went and he called Rav Moshe. This is in the 1950s on a telephone from Eretz Yisrael, which you can imagine how much a phone call like that cost. And he was on the phone for like an hour debating the topic with him until they got clarity. Rav Aaron would not pasken that shayla. He deferred to Rav Moshe. And obviously, after Rav Aaron was nifter, Rav Moshe, first and foremost, was the posek for America till his passing. Now, really, I think we'll see this soon also, but probably that shift, when America started, you know, with poskim, like, you know, of Henkin, who was a huge, huge, huge Talmud Chacham. Henkin, actually, interestingly, was a Talmud of Rav Aaron Cutler's father-in-law, Mr. Zalman Meltzer. So they knew of each other. Rav Henkin was a Rav. Rav Aaron was the first posek in America that was a Rosh Yeshiva. And then after him, Rav Moshe was also a Rosh Yeshiva, and it was referred to as a Rosh Yeshiva. And that itself already changed the dynamic in America of the Rabbanim and the Rosh Yeshivas. Rav Aaron was such a force, as we'll see soon, he shifted the whole paradigm. And really the whole yeshiva world, which we'll talk about, but the fact that the Piske Halacha was coming from Rav Aaron Cutler, was coming from the head of, even his day, wasn't necessarily the biggest yeshiva. Tells was maybe bigger than him. But it already changed the dynamic of a Rosh Yeshiva and a Posek. And that's where I want to shift. Once we realize that Rav Aaron Cutler was a Posek and the prominence that he had as a Posek, going through all these tshuvas from Gedolim, the ultimate Haskama by Rav Chaim Ozer, I'd like to show you some of the psakim that Rav Aaron dealt with. And I think when you see the weight of the shilas that he dealt with, you see, I think the way his son Rav Schneer described him in the introduction to Mishnas Rav Aaron, that the same fire that you saw in the learning in yeshiva was also there with the psak halacha, with the clarity and the strength to stand behind the psak. And probably the first major psak, which I'm not sure time-wise was the first, and really this topic deserves its own share. But there's a famous kolkole that went out in the 1950s against the New York Board of Rabbis.
Yes.
That, in short, was, before that, there in America, there were these boards of rabbis.
Slovenstein.
which it still exists, which was comprised of Rabbanim. I should say, careful what words I say.
This is being recorded.
I know. But Rav Moshe Feinstein in his tshuvas would not refer to conservative rabbi as a rabbi. He would refer someone, Orthodox Rav was a Rav. Conservative Rav Moshe would write out the English word rabbi in quotes, trying to emphasize the fact there's a big difference. And Rabbi Aaron was one of the driving forces in this Kol Kore, which assered, so the Kol Kore is psaked in, which assered an Orthodox Rav to serve on a board together with a non-Orthodox rabbi. And it was a big tumult in its days, for not just its days, it lasted for a while. But Rabbi Aaron was the strength and the force behind it. He got other Rosh Hashivas to sign with him. And anyone who knows, you could go through a share on that, which names were on that Kol Kore, which names weren't. It was, you know, Rabbi Aaron, Rabbi Moshe, and Rabbi Yaakov, but there were others that were not there. But Rabbi Aaron had the guts, the strength to stand up for his position. I found a story, fascinating story, someone told me. Rabbi Aaron took positions on the Manhattan Erev. I believe this is before the Hak about the Brooklyn Erev. Rabbi Aaron took a position, there are tshuvas here, the Chelek Aleph, and the Mishnas Rabbi Aaron, where Rabbi Aaron writes extensively about Erevin. And I was told that those tshuvas were about the Manhattan Erev. And though it's not clearly defined there in the tshuva, but Rabbi Aaron was against it. And there's a story that I heard ANDP aid that this psak that Rabbi Aaron, you know, they were talking about the Erev there, and later Moshe joined him in that psak that he also was against it. And this is in the early years of Lakewood. Rabbi Aaron was fundraising for his yeshiva Lakewood. He was also the chief fundraiser for Chinuch Atzma in Eretz Yisrael. And by the way, he also was Rosh Yeshiva of his father-in-law's yeshiva, Eitz Chaim in Eretz Yisrael. So he had at least three budgets that he had to worry about. And he was flat out threatened. If he comes out against this Manhattan Erev by a certain rich Gevirim that don't expect to see a penny. And Rabbi Aaron thundered on the table. He said, I'd rather close down my yeshiva than to budge one iota from the Shulchan Aruch. Nope. You're not going to play me like that. Rabbi Aaron was such a gibor. It's such strength. Now I'm thinking about it. Now I tell over these stories. One of the famous stories, Rabbi Aaron went in. People here know the players. I forgot the names. But during the Holocaust, the Vada Tzala, he went in and pleaded with one of the secular American aides to, I don't know if it was to the president, and he was pleading to him in Yiddish. And I believe it was the president or one of the senators who was an American who did not know a word of Yiddish, said, I don't know what the man is saying, but I believe him with all my heart. Rabbi Aaron spoke, his piercing blue eyes, he meant it with every fiber in his being. You're not going to mess with him in Pesach Halacha. He's not backing down, especially not for money. And really, Erevin, which we all know is one of the most complex topics in Halacha, Rabbi Aaron was absolute bucky. The Lakewood Erev was built by his Talmud, that we mentioned before, he was very close to, Rav Moshe Heineman of the Star K. I was told, and it's quite fascinating, Rav Moshe Heineman is an ingenious person. He decided, okay, Rabbi Aaron's going to come check out the Erev. Aaron entrusted Rav Moshe Heineman to build the Erev. So Moshe Aaron wanted to get as much shemush, as much clarity in halacha from Rav Aaron as possible. So you know what he did? He built the Erev, and he deliberately built it with multiple shilas of things which are not so poshut if it works or not. Just so when he'll take Rav Aaron around the Erev to show him all the things, he'll get as much shemush as possible, much clarification as possible, to see what Rav Aaron holds about Erevin. And that's what he did. In the writing, there's a beautiful sefer, maybe I'm a little biased, my cousin, Rav Shlomi Francis, has a beautiful sefer published by Feldheim, or Israel Bookshops, excuse me, called The Laws of Erev. Beautiful English book with diagrams. He told me he spent hours sitting with Rav Heineman, and there's extensive psakim of Rav Aaron, some from the Mishnas Rav Aaron, but many that were Baal Peh that he got from Rav Heineman, who got directly from from Rav Aaron, using these his cute idea of how to get more shilas from him. There's a quite scary and complex shaila that Rav Aaron had to deal with. It's on your sheets, the second Maror Makom. This is from the second volume of Mishnas Rav Aaron. Evan Ezer, Simon Samach Gimel. I'll read the shaila inside. It says, Nishalti, okay, from the Rav of Shuchtman, in the following case. Shneyachim, there are two brothers. Basically, two brothers. Shahaya Echad Mehem Nasai. One of them was married to a girl. Vashenu Meshuduch Ha'achas Eishas Achiv. And the other one was engaged to his brother's wife's sister. Halachically, that's Mutter. There's a concept of Rabbi Yehuda al-Chassid who's machmir against that. But technically speaking, al-pi halacha, two brothers could marry two sisters. So the case was one brother was married, the other one was engaged. Yesterday, Daf Yomi in Yuma, not Yavamas. The Nifter Hanasoi. V'heiniach ishto muberes kishlosha chadoshim. Rachmanasan, I saw the details, it was a car crash. The husband died, leaving a pregnant wife, Rachmanasan. But a potential shayla of Yibam. The husband died at this time without children. V'achiv rotza lisa mishadeches. The brother was ready to go through and want to marry his fiancee, his kala. V'ina rotza lahamtin ashateled. The Yibam Shiloh will only be finished if that pregnant woman gives birth to a child. If chas v'shom, she would have a miscarry, she would fall to Yibam. She would be subject to Yibam. So the Shiloh was asked to Rav Aaron, what should we do? And Rav Aaron breaks down. There's 3 points in this very complicated Yibam Chalitza Shiloh. One question is, there's a concept called Achas Zukukaso. One's not allowed to marry the sister of someone that you are connected with towards Yibam. This is a strange, weird situation where a guy potentially be marrying, guys in yeshiva know we learned these sugyas, well, you ever know Nogea Halacha L'Maisa? Marrying Acha Sukukaso, the wife of someone you're connected with in terms of Yibam. Right, let's make it that Reuven was the brother who passed away. Shimon if you go through right now, before, she's only in the third month of pregnancy. Do you want to wait another 6 months? The guy doesn't. He could be marrying Achasu Kukaso, the wife of someone he's zakuk to. That's a big problem. Also, shailas of the mevatel mitzvas yibum, and what's going to be if chas v'shalom she does miscarry? Would you need chalitza? And if you get chalitza, would he allow to stay married to his wife? Could be achas chalutzaso, the sister of somebody to chalitza to. Very complicated, not run-of-the-mill shailas. Who got the shaila? Rabbi Aaron Cutler. Rabbi Aaron Cutler has a huge tshuva on this. Rabbi Aaron Cutler knew you've almost backwards and forwards, upside down, inside out. He mastered this case for multiple reasons. But this is just a taste of what Rabbi Aaron Cutler was dealing with. The biggest of the big. When we do Yevamos, if you want, we can go through the whole tshuva. But it might take a month. Huh? He paskin its mutter. His mutter to get remarried, and he actually pushed him to get married as quickly as possible. That's what he told them. One of his aterim was, Rabbi Aaron held in such a scenario, the wife isn't halakhically falling to Yibam yet. Even though it's right there in the horizon, doesn't have a kid, ben ein lo ein alav, you know the Gemara in the beginning of Acholitz. But Rabbi Aaron paskin in this scenario, she's not falling to Yibam. Bechidish, but even bigger than that, bigger shoulders. I'll tell you another very interesting psak halacha, and this will transition into the third and final area I want to talk about, Rabbi Aaron. We all know, maybe it's a little reminiscent of our spread, right? Everyone loves a bris. You get those round things, bagels, donuts, a lot of fun, right? When do you have a bris? In the morning. Why do we have a bris in the morning? Why don't we do it in the afternoon, the evening? So two reasons. Firstly, for the average case, there's a din of zrizim akdim and lamitzvos. You have the concept is you could do a bris in the morning. So zrizim akdim says you do a bris as early as possible. And that's why the normal time to do a bris is in the morning. The cases you sometimes have a bris in the afternoon or the evening, a lot of times are the medical cases where there was a delay in the bris, and once they get clearance, they set it up as quickly as possible. Especially if the bris is after the eighth day. There's an even greater significance, more than Zeriza Makdim. Once a person, now there, obviously, this is an onis involved, but the concept is after the eighth day, every moment is a big inyan, is a chiyuv, that you must have a bris. And you can't push that off. It's even more of a chomer, or more of a stringent topic than zriz makdim. So that's why we have brisim, always, in the morning or right away, as soon as we get medical clearance. Well, back in Rabbi Aaron Cutler's days in Lakewood, brisim took place during lunch. Excuse me? I found this in print, and I checked it up with some people. Rabbi Aaron Cutler's Lakewood Brisim, not in today's Lakewood, but today's Lakewood and not Rabbi Aaron Cutler's Lakewood. But in Rabbi Aaron's days, Brisim in the yeshiva took place during lunch. What was the reason? Bittul Torah. You have a bris. Sit together. Speeches, this and that. They give a short break for breakfast in Lakewood. Rabbi Aaron Cutler is Mechadish, Bittul Torah beats out Zeriza Makdimim. Seems Rabbi Aaron was even willing to say this even where the bris was pushed off. It was a chiyuv for a bris at every moment. So I saw someone tight shit up. Okay, but once you have the bris, it's fine. So Mamela, Rabbi Aaron held that yeshiva sedarim take precedence over over Birkat Torah. I was talking to someone about this yesterday. He said, oh, it's similar to the psak. Sometimes if a guy misses a mincha in yeshiva, what the correct psak halach is. Birkat Torah takes precedence over many, many things. And I think from that psak, you see tremendously Reb Aaron's powers and strength of Baal Mechadesh, strength to stand behind a definitely unique psak. But it also transitions into my next step I want to talk about. And this, I think, was Reb Aaron's greatest legacy in psak halacha. And it's so much so that we don't even realize it. Reb Aaron Cutler really became, for the most part, the posek of today's yeshiva world. The psakim that Reb Aaron Cutler gave in his yeshiva in Lakewood, and the mail was splintered out to many talmidim who opened their own yeshivas. And even if their yeshivas are not necessarily going exactly, you know, the Masorah of Reb Aaron, but in psak halacha there are many things which carry over. I'll give you one example. Reb Aaron Cutler held the halacha that one should keep 72 minutes, Rabbeinu Tam's shita, when it comes to do malacha after Shabbos. He held that in terms of shailas about brisim. I'll show you in the bottom of the sheets. He held that for Sfiras Omer. 72 minutes. You want to know what's the time of Vali Laila? 72 minutes. Now, in the Hasidic world, that's quite common. Right? 72 minutes, Rabbeinu Tam Shita is very much so followed in the Hasidic world. But Reb Aaron was the one who pushed it in the yeshiva world. And it's interesting, you know, you look at your local Lakewood Kolo. Over here, many times, when do they daven? They daven 50 minutes after Shkia. And that's so, okay, by the time they finish, it'll be 72 minutes. For Sfiras Omer, they daven even later. They daven 55 minutes. So that they'll count Sfira when it's 72 minutes. I grew up, the Rav of my shul, very close with him, Aaron Zuckerman, was a Talmud Rav Aaron in his last couple of years. I remember the years that there are times the Rav didn't count Sfira for the Tzibur. Most shuls, the Rav will get up there and will make the bracha for Sfira. I remember times Rav Zuckerman did not count Sfira, it was under 72 minutes. He would permit it for the shul, but personally, he kept Rav Aaron 72 minutes. And Reb Aaron actually negotiated, again, psak halacha, but also as a leader. He had a major sit-down with the Satmar Rebbe, Rav Yoel Teitelbaum. Back in the day in New York, seems the way things were running was the regular world. Moshe Feinstein didn't do 72. He did less. He did 50. And the way it worked out in the American scene, okay, so you had people, you know, keeping, you know, if you hold a Rabbeinu Tam, so it's a chumrah for after Shabbos, but technically speaking, it could be the ultimate kula on the beginning of Shabbos. If it's not seis, if it's not nightfall till 72 minutes, huh? So you know what? You could jump in the shower, you could go driving, even after our normal shkia, put for care, the chassidim, it's too early to daven mincha. I'm joking. But, so one could definitely have issues, and it sounds like there were issues, of a funny scene. In America, the Litvish Yidden starting Shabbos, no, 18 minutes before Shkia, and the Hasidim going, it's not Shabbos yet. Aaron Cutler sat down with the Satmar Rav and convinced him. He says, you know, I'm going to spread the 72, Rebbeinu Tam, but we have to be machmer on the other end. Adassa Rabbaran pushed here in America, and similarly, they have that going in Eretz Yisrael too. And everybody across the board is not makel like Rabbeinu Tam, they're just machmer like Rabbeinu Tam. I'll tell you a very interesting psak. In the Lakewood Yeshiva, this was true for decades. I was not yet able to be mevayer. Is this happening ad hayom hazeh? But I assume it is. They'll serve meat during lunch. And they'll serve milk for dinner in under 6 hours.
Oh boy.
Excuse me? This is a firm Lakewood Yeshiva? They're serving milk after meat in under 6 hours? Yes. They did this from the times of Rabbi Aaron, straight. It could be Ada Yom Hazeh. Where does this come from? Rabbi Aaron Cutler. Just on Shabbos, someone told me they heard straight from one of Rabbi Aaron's great Talmidim, or Forsheimer, who's one of the big poskim in Lakewood today. He said that Rabbi Aaron Cutler held 5.5 hours is the minhag of 6 hours. Rabbi Aaron Cutler held there is no minhag of 6 hours. 6 hours is 5.5. And therefore he felt this is the psak halacha the yeshiva is going with. And there ain't no room for Talmidim to be machmer. 5.5 equals 6. Now, obviously there are others that might differ with such a psak, and they might think their minhag is 6, and they keep 6. And I don't think I'm personally changing my minhag based on my on the share. But that's what Rabbi Aaron held. And he was ready to take it, even against Kanoim. I'll tell you a story. I just double-checked this also in from Eretz Yisrael before Shabbos. There's a story back in the day. You know, Lakewood always had their Kanoim, their frummies, who always thought they were better. Unfortunately, it sounds like they were even better than the Rosh Hashiva. There were some bachrim that were scheduled to eat by Rabbi Aaron's house. They went before Shabbos and spoke to the Rebbetzin, asking her which bakery does she buy her stuff from. You don't trust Rabbi Aaron Cutler? Maybe these bachrim didn't realize Rabbi Aaron Cutler was posik. I'm giving the share 50 years too late. But it also shows some chutzpah. Bachram always had chutzpah. But Rabbi Aaron knew he had such talmidim. He had such. Someone told me another story, like, you know, someone was like chepering him about something, about davening he was doing. It's okay, I got it. He saw these guys, he knew about this type of chevra, but he still stuck to his guns. Yeshiva's keeping 5.5 hours. Okay, that's when we're serving dinner. That's what he held. I'll tell you another psak. Now, this is a good story. I'm proud this one might go viral. I might get in trouble for this, but I did my research. In the early 1950s in Lakewood, it was reported to me that Lakewood served Krispy Kreme, Chalav Stam. I don't really mean Krispy Kreme. That was for effect here in Florida. But the Lakewood Yeshiva served non-Chalav Yisrael. If I got up today in Lakewood and said this, I'll probably be stoned. In fact, where do I know this from? I heard this b'shem Rav Yosef Tendler. Lav Hashalom. He was a Talmud of Lakewood. Later, for many years, was a menahal of Yeshivas Neri Yisrael, their high school. I believe Art School has a biography about him. And he gave edus. He remembers when he was in Lakewood, they served Chalav Stam. I said the story over to some friends of mine who are Lakewood Talmidim. They said, can't be! Impossible! Lo hayev lo nivra! Sheker v'chazov! Can't be. Rav Aaron Cutler with Paskin, he would allow Chalav Stam in Lakewood. Shh! Mamash Avodah Zarah. But it's true. Firstly, you have to realize, this is my brother's point, gets credit, that that Rav Yosef Tendler was one of the biggest proponents of Chol Yisrael. He's the one who brought Chol Yisrael, pride of the farm, to Baltimore. He has no axe to grind. He's not looking to show, he was also, Rav Aaron was also pro-Chol Stam. No, it wasn't available, it wasn't good, whatever the scenario was, Rav Aaron felt in the early 1950s, the yeshiva in Lakewood could use Chol Stam. And there were other yeshivas that did the same. That's what Rav Aaron did. Furthermore, I checked it, I had Edus, also from my phone call from Eretz Yisrael, and person also paskened, also remembered that they had Chol Stam. He remembered breakstones in Lakewood. And yeah, not so crazy. It's interesting. Yosef Tendler's own grandchildren told over the story to their Rebbeim in Lakewood. And of course, they had the same response. Oh, maybe your grandfather's getting a little old. You know, he's not remembering things as sharp. They went back to the Zeta. The Zeta said, no. He says, it's a shame that people have to change history to fit the narrative today. We know of such stories. But really, what I want to spend the last few minutes here going through is so many of the minhagim in yeshivas, so many things, cute things, substantial things, all come from Rav Aaron. First, I mentioned in the earlier share this year how my Rebbe Rav Kinarik, Rav Kinarik Tzatzal, spent the Shabbos in Lakewood and noticed how in benching, Rav Aaron would try to finish the bracha of Bnei Yerushalayim and answer Amen together with the person leading the benching. Multiple halakhic reasons to do that. So he himself finished with Bnei Yerushalayim, Erkosh, Bnei Yerushalayim, Rechata Hashem, Bnei Yerushalayim, Amen, together with the person leading the benching. I found interesting minhag. It's sometimes confusing. Shuls, you sometimes see people, by Lecha Dodi, what happens? Okay, so the people who are up, not the people who are asleep. The people who are up, obviously everyone gets up for the last stanza, turns the back. But you sometimes see people get up for Yamin L'smol. I always think to myself, hey buddy, you're jumping. Or if you're half asleep, you're like, hey, do we get there yet? But you see people standing up for Yamin L'smol. Well, Rav Aaron did even more. He stood for the first two and the last two. Really? To be honest, I don't think I ever saw anyone do that. But Azoy State, it's on the bottom of your sheets, middle of your sheets. Moran Rabbi Yalan, Hoya Omi L'Shni, Chorazim Rabbi Shonim, Shomer V'Zachar, V'Lichras Shabbos, and the last two, Yom L'Smo L'Boi V'Shalom. It's interesting, in Nusach Sfard, I grew up in a shul d'Dava Nusach Sfard, right? When you have a Yontif, so Ashkenazim, we skip the whole thing. Mizrach Shir Yom HaShabbos. Right? It's another reason David by an Ashkenazi shul. Yes. Shabbos Yontif. But Nusach Sfard, they say half a Lecha Dodi. What do? First two stanzas and the last two stanzas. I would suggest that's where Rav Aaron was coming from. There's something significant. I'm not sure exactly what. But when you break down Lecha Dodi, the first two stanzas, last two stanzas, Rav Aaron held for that he gave that extra chashivas. He stood up for those first two and stood up for the last two. In terms of Simchas Torah, if you go to a shul, you know how Simchas Torah is. Most shuls have the basic same, they have Davin Shachris, and they have a little some Kiddush, Hakafos, Laning, Musaf, regular. You ever daven in yeshiva in Simchas Torah, you never know what you'll get. I'm not talking about the atmosphere. I'm talking about the Seder of Tefillah. Baron Cutler in his days in Lakewood, it's brought down here, also on your page, most Dalid. They were daven Shachris, then Musaf, no Hakafos, no Kriyas Torah. They would do Duchening by Musaf. Then they would make a big Kiddush. Then they'll do Akavos. Then Kriyas Torah. then mincha, then eat. If you daven in the shul, you're scratching your head, what's going on? If you daven right here in yeshiva, you know exactly what we're talking about. Thank you, Rav Aaron Kotler. It's a different Simchas Torah experience, different schedule. Sounds pretty different. Oh, what? What's going on here? You're davening musaf before hakafus, laning. What's going on here? As I zok, Rav Aaron Kotler, one could do that to better facilitate the day. Also, different yeshivas at different minhagim for Hanukkah. The minhag of my yeshiva, funny, we were more makbid here. We were the ones more makbid on Betel Torah than Rav Aaron. By me and yeshiva, the Zman Halakha came, one person would light, you know, stop Seder for a minute, they would light Hanukkah Neros, sing Haneros Halalu, and then go back to Seder, and the married people, Kolo, would only light Hanukkah Neros after Seder. In Lakewood, the Pesach was the otherwise. They stopped in the middle of Seder, everyone went home to light Hanukkah Neros. How come here, Rav Aaron favored, you know, the Prati HaMitzvah over Betel Torah? Good kasha. There's a lot we could still pilfer on all this. But I think that was really Reb Aaron's ultimate legacy in Pesach Halacha. He was a goon. He was someone who was so prominent as a posek. Chaim Ozer turned to him before the age of 40. He got all these complicated, these Yibam Shilas. He was the strength behind Erevin Shilas. New York Board of Rabbis. Creative Pesachim. But ultimately, his legacy in Pesach Halacha, and we don't even realize it, is so many of the Pesachim that go on in the yeshiva world, in Lakewood yeshivas, all around, really stem from Rav Aaron. I want to just end with one story, which says a lot about the person. I heard the story from Rabbi Yochum Getzel Rosenblatt, who for many years had a yeshiva, still exists in Queens, Yeshiva Kesser Torah, which is the Minion Factory of Queens, if Queens could have a Minion Factory. It's not the levels of Brooklyn, Muncie, and Lakewood. Borough Park, yeah. But Yeshiva Kesser Torah, by Rosenblatt, told over the story. He learned by Rav Hanoch, but also by Rav Aaron. And one time he was walking the hallway of the old Lakewood Yeshiva, and Rav Aaron was learned part of the time in his study, in his office. And he sees this scene. The door had a big glass door. He sees the scene. Reb Aaron is literally dancing. He looks. No one else is in the room. Reb Aaron is dancing. What is going on here? Reb Aaron sees him. He's like, please go to the base medrash. Bring me Reb Chaim Epstein. Reb Chaim Epstein was later the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva of Eastern Parkway, Zichron Melech. And he was considered one of the top Talmidim in Yeshiva in his day. Chaim Epstein goes in. All right, Rosenblatt was still watching to see what happens. He sits down and he learns with Reb Chaim Epstein for like 5-10 minutes. Finishes, Chaim Epstein gets up and leaves and goes back to the base medrash. Rosenblatt's like, well, what's going on here? So he decided to ask. He found out, Rav Aaron told him, that there is a shver bir hagron choshen mishpat that he had a question on for 25 years. Finally, he was learning, going over it another time, and he figured out an answer, what the Gra meant, the Vilna Gaon meant. And he was so excited, he just got up and danced. He wanted to share it and work it out with one of his Talmidim. So that's why he asked for Chaim Epstein from the Beis Medrash. But here is a man, his love of Torah was something so palpable. He loved Torah. He fought for Torah. And it's Megalgam Schus Aidei Zakai, and he's one of the biggest reasons why today in America, Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of Torah. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Have a wonderful week. And really, thank you, everyone, for coming. It gives me chizuk. I hope it gives you chizuk. And we should all have a wonderful week.